Welcome to this podcast version of the longest-running soccer radio talk show in North America. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass. Heard exclusively right here on soccerisakickinthegrass.com. Your hosts, former Rochester Lancers trainer Joe Redcard Ziriani and Andrew Battisti. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass podcasts are brought to you by the following sponsors: Salvatore's Pizza, JC Fibers of Rochester, and Top Notch Monogramming. Now here's Soccer is a Kick in the Grass.
Hello, this is Andrew Battisti, and welcome to SoccerIsAKickInTheGrass.com podcasts. This is the third segment in our special extended interview with the former owner of the Rochester Lancers, Mr. Charlie Sciano, as we continue our series on the history of soccer in Rochester. This segment features the year 1971, the year the Rochester Lancers won the regular season title in the North American Soccer League and played at Yankee Stadium and also competed in the two longest games in the history of professional soccer, both in the 1971 NASL playoffs. So let's go to part three of our interview with Charlie Sciano right now.
Now we go on to 71, and there were some changes in the league, and there were some key new teams that came in. The Cosmos started in 1971,
right,
and Toronto Metros, our biggest rival, also started in 1971, along with Montreal.
Yeah.
And Kansas City folded, so we had a league now of eight teams. The Lancers, Cosmos, Toronto, Montreal in one division, Washington, Dallas, Atlanta, and St. Louis in the other division.
Right.
And we brought in some great players in 71.
Well, we brought Gorian.
Adolfo Gorian.
And Sal De Rosa. Sal Adolfo. And you know, Clive, I still remember the call I got received from Clive Toy. Because, you know, Clive and I have been very, very close friends throughout all these years. And we almost hired Clive when I was president of the American Soccer League, except I couldn't persuade the league to hire him. But Clive was then in between jobs before, didn't know if the North American Soccer League was going to exist or not. And that was in 68, 69. We had several meetings in New York where I really wanted to hire him to work the American Soccer League. In any event, as you indicate, we brought Sal brought Gorian, and I got a call from Clive. He says, "Charlie, you're the laughing stock of the league. Bring in this guy. He's got two knees that are fractured and broken. He can hardly walk." I said, "Clive, please." "No," I said. And of course, Gory was fantastic, to say the least.
And where did he play before?
He played in. He played for Juventus. He played for Palermo. He had a wonderful heritage, bloodline, and he was just a national team player of Italy. He played a national team, so he had tremendous. He was a wonderful gentleman. He was great to have on the team.
And for the Italian fans in Rochester.
Oh, they just loved him. Just loved him. And he was a magnificent. He was really a Facchetti type. You know, Facchetti is known to be a great attacking fullback. So when he played right fullback, he really improved Charlie Mitchell's game. Because Charlie emulated what Gory taught him. He did a hell of a job, and Mitchell improved every year that Gory was here. And Gory was just a magnificent technician. I remember Gory in the 71 of two fantastic plays out to this day. We're playing in Dallas, and Gory carried the ball up the right side. Sleisler was then with us. Sleisler was on the left wing. Sleisler just made a run for the far post. Gory put that ball right about 6 foot high and 6 inches from the right post. All slice. I could have scored that goal, I think.
Really?
All slice and touch it with his head. The goalkeeper didn't have a chance. The goalkeeper, it was just a curving ball coming back towards Sleisler. And I could see it coming because he's going. And then we're in Atlanta, and this was just a magnificent play. Gory took the ball from the right side, crossed the length of the field, went all the way to the left fullback spot, penetrated, Sleisler went all the way to the far post, the right post, and that says he gave him the right fullback position, Gory. And he's the same type of ball again, and there was Sleisler just to nod it in again. It was the chemistry between Sleisler, Carlos, and Gory was fantastic, just fantastic.
And you mentioned Manny Sleisler. He also was an all-star in 71, played here for four seasons,
yep.
German player.
great German player, great left-footed German player, fantastic left wing, 6 foot tall, very strong. He reminds you so much of Stojanovic, except he was a more controlled player than Stojanovic, and probably just as fast as Stojanovic. Now, when you put that speed of Sleisler with Carlos and Renato da Costa, you had a tremendous problem. We had a great... I don't know how we didn't win the championship in 71, because the 71 team was much stronger than the 70 team.
It sure
all
sounds there, like
all was, because we had Escos too.
And then Pancho Escos, another player we all know from, was former coach with the Rhinos. Tell us about Pancho.
Well, Pancho was, I had a great friend, and my friend Enzo Magnozzi, who owned the Inter Club in New York City. And Enzo would always, I say, Enzo, who have you got? And he had a player by the name of Millar, a Scottish midfielder who I thought was on a par with Moratti, except he was taller, stronger. He worked as a mason down in New York City, and Enzo got him a job as a mason. He made a tremendous sum of money working as a mason, and I couldn't persuade him to come to Rochester. I really liked Millar. He was tremendous. But Enzo calls me. I had a meeting in North American Soccer League, and he called me on a Saturday morning in the hotel room. He said, "Charlie, I got a player from Argentina that you've got to see. His name is Francisco Escos." I said, "Okay." He said, "We're playing this game out in Long Island." Of course, I didn't realize how long Long Island was, So Sal was with me at the meeting in North American Soccer League, and it was Sunday morning. And he says, "Come on out. The game's at 11 o'clock. So I said, "Sal, we'll grab the..." I'll never forget this. "Sal, we'll grab the train. We'll ride out to Long Island." And he says, "No, Joe, take a taxi. Why take a train?" Said, "I'll never forget this, Sandy. That taxi bill was $85 without the tip one way. It was at the far end of Long Island."
And that's $85 in 1971 dollars.
I was going to kill Sal DeRosa. I said, "Nobody would believe we paid $85 to go one way." So we went there, and it was a great soccer complex, much like you'll see at Faith and Truth Field. Now there were maybe 20 fields, and there were no bleachers. So we just stood there. And we watched this kid play and watched his energy and up and down the field, control the ball, pass, shoot, run, defend. Wouldn't let anyone go through without taking a piece of them. He played defensive midfielder. He was just, I was sold right then. I said, "Enzo." So we went into, I had the contract with me, went in there, signed him right in the locker room. And Enzo released him to us, and that was it. That's how I got here.
It sounds like he's a typical Argentinian type player.
Oh,
very tough.
Oh, very, just like Rawhide. He played 160 minutes every game. I mean, he was up and down, never stopped. That's good. And played with his heart. Played with his total heart, and just a wonderful player.
So Pancho and Frank Odoi as your defensive midfielders.
Yeah, our holding midfielders. Yeah.
Wow. That did sound like quite a team. And in the league, you proved it. You played 13, 6, and 5, and by far the best record in the NASL.
Oh, yeah. We should have really won the championship that year. But that was, again, probably my fault, because I suggested the rule that we play 15-minute overtime quarters at the end of the match until a goal was scored.
It was your fault, Charlie.
My fault. I take responsibility for that.
Oh, boy.
But I take responsibility for the longest game in the history of soccer. Yeah. The two longest games we play here in Rochester.
Okay. We'll get to that in just a second. I want to ask you about Toronto and the Cosmos, because those two teams coming in, they were not a slight Montreal, but the Montreal Olympic wasn't...
It was the Montreal Olympic, yeah.
Montreal Olympic came in. They were not a stellar team at that time. I mean, obviously, the Impact were a much better team, I think, record-wise than the Olympic. But the Toronto Metros came into the league, and did the rivalry just start right away, or did it develop over time?
No, it started right away, and it's crazy because they played here, and we played that game at Red Wing Stadium. The opening game of the season, 71, we played at Red Wing Stadium because they reseeded Aquinas Stadium, and the grass wasn't growing yet. And so we had to play the first game at Red Wing Stadium. And in that game, the player coach of the Toronto Metro is an English fellow who now does color up there. And I wish I could remember his name. I should have read my clippings. But he came in on a ball that I thought was on the ground, and Campos dove for it, and he went for the ball and kicked him and fractured Campos' jaw. It was fractured in three places. That really started that really started the competition between the teams. That really started the that was it, because I thought it was awful close play, and there are those that said it was just an accident, but I thought it was awfully close. And I know Campos wasn't going to back off, and neither did he. Leggett, Graham Leggett was his name. Graham Leggett, it comes to me now. Graham Leggett, and it didn't stop. That competition was fierce.
Now, how did Toronto come into the league? What happened there?
We had such a good season in 70. We created a lot of excitement, you know, and the Toronto, we were looking for new franchises, and Toronto, Montreal, and New York. New York was critical for us, I think. And finally, Clive and Phil were able to persuade, you know, the three major people who were in Warner to come in. And Warner didn't really buy the Cosmos initially. It was owned by Steve Ross and Jay Emmett and another fellow. Then the Cosmos Corporation became a part of the ownership of Warner.
Those names sound very familiar to all NASL aficionados.
That's how it happened. They made an application. We wanted them in. Toronto was a good soccer town. Just had to be developed, and that's how it happened.
Now, Toronto played at Varsity Stadium, right?
Varsity Stadium.
For all those years, they played at Varsity Stadium. Until they went over to the X later on.
Yeah, the X finally. Yeah.
But the interesting thing about the Cosmos, their first season, they actually played at Yankee Stadium. And I read this. Now, you can tell me if this is true or not. The Yankees had right of first refusal to say if they felt the Cosmos matches would hurt the turf, they could tell them they couldn't play. Is that true or not?
Absolutely true. And we flew down for a Sunday game against the Cosmos and our old DC-3, right? Flew down in 71.
We still flew that.
We flew in 71, we're still flying the old DC-3. The Americans used it too, so it was just we flew in, grabbed the bus, get to Yankee Stadium, and no one is there. And the stadium is locked up. God's truth. God's truth. And I am furious until a Yankee representative shows up and says the game has been canceled. So I call Clive. I said, Clive, Charlie tried to call you, but you guys were already in the air, and we couldn't call you. I said, well, you didn't call the airport? And so he said, no, we're going to play the game tomorrow night. So then it became a question of what would be more economical, to fly back in our DC-3 or stay in a hotel overnight. We chose to fly back to Rochester, D.C. It was cheaper.
With the hotel costs in New York even back then, I'm sure.
So much cheaper. So we flew back, and we were flying back, and then the league ordered us to play the game Monday night. It was a fascinating little scenario again. That, you know, I remember all these little anecdotal things because the game was refereed by Gordon Sutherland, who was Norman Sutherland's brother. Norman Sutherland was the general manager of the Washington Darts. Right?
Right.
And Gordon was a nice guy, great referee, and a good friend. And in that game, we're at Yankee Stadium, and we're doing the broadcast in 71. And Charlie Mitchell is really a very rough, rough tackle from behind. He's really injured. And we have our surgeon with us, an orthopedic surgeon. Doc's out there on the field with him. He doesn't want to move him. Now, he had been an advocate of the fact that too many soccer players with head injuries had been moved before they were certain if there had been any concussion, they shouldn't be moving. So he was ordered by Sutherland to get off the field, and he refused to get off the field. He said, no, we've got to stabilize Charlie's knee before we get off the field, and it looks like it might be an anterior cruciate ligament, and I don't want to do anything. He said, no, he ordered him, drag him off the field. He wouldn't go. So he gave doctor a red card.
No, this is before Joe Sirianni got a red card.
No, Joe was out with him, but the doctor got the red card. Right? The doctor, he's the only doctor in the history of North American soccer league that was ever given a red card. But more important, the Yankee announcer, Bob Shepard, was calling the game. But, you know, Bob Shepard,
the guy who calls the Yankee games today,
was doing the soccer games, right?
Yeah.
And so you hear this announcement. Red card to Dr. Martin Korn of the Rochester. and just 3 years ago, I meet Bob Shepard in Florida, and I said, Bob, do you remember doing the Cosmos game? Yeah, Charlie, I remember that. You remember what you did when you announced the red card to Dr. Martin Korn? Said, yeah, I did that, didn't I? We laughed about it. So, and to this day, when I see Marty, I say, Marty, remember the red card you got?
So we had a doctor red carded, we had a trainer red carded.
Oh, there's more history. It's just so many funny things. I've got to write this book, but go ahead.
You definitely have to write the book. But so you mentioned this in passing about Joe. We don't want to forget about Joe Sirianni, our good friend, the host of Soccer's Kick in the Grass. Tell us about how he came into the team.
I don't know, he just sort of appeared. Joe sort of came out of nowhere. I don't know where. All at once, we had Joe and his little black bag and his little pad and his little sponge and a spray, and there Joe was.
He had the magic spray.
And huh? Joe was just with us. I mean, wherever he went, Joe was with us on the DC-3.
What year did he start?
He started in 67 with us.
Okay, so he was there the whole time.
Yeah, maybe not the early part of 67, but he was there in 67 with us. We made those trips to Boston and Newark to play the Newark Ukrainian Sitch.
Oh, boy. But back to Yankee Stadium, what was it like playing in the most hallowed stadium in America?
Well, it was just kind of a dream, you know, especially when we were locked out the first time we played there. And I call Clive every name in the book, and he was apologetic, unbelievable. It was a great feeling. And to have Bob Shepard, because I said to Clive, I said, who's that? Who's that on loudspeaker? He's an announcer. That's Bob Shepard. I said, that is Bob Shepard from the Yankees. You're going to remember. Batting number 9, Yogi Berra. Berra, the catcher. And I always, there was Bob Shepard doing the game. And, you know, then we sat in the box where Steinbrenner sits. And it was kind of neat. It was just great.
Wow.
It was great stuff.
It was just that was the only year they played there was 67. Yep. Because then they went out to Hofstra the next year.
Hofstra, a terrible field. And then we went to Randall's Island, which is a legend unto itself.
Yeah, we'll get to that story about we saw in the Cosmos movie about Pelé. But back to 71. So the Lancers win the regular season championship.
We won the Northern Division.
Won the Northern Division, had the best record in the league.
Yep.
And we had to play the second place team in the South, which was Dallas.
A great team.
They had Mirko Stojanovic, the goalkeeper, one of the best goalkeepers in the early days of the North American Soccer League.
Yeah.
And this brings us to the longest game ever played. And we talked about this on our show last year. I know we mentioned about people want to bring back overtime. Why the soccer people don't understand. Why don't they just keep playing like in the NHL? Tell us about that match, that first match, the first leg. It was actually the best 2 out of 3 series it was.
Yeah, it was 2 out of 3.
It was September 1st, 1971, the Lancers and the Tornado at Juanes Hollander Stadium.
Yeah, and Cooper was in goal. Kenny Cooper was in goal, not Mirko Stojanovic, because he was injured.
Oh, okay.
And Kenny was injured, too, but he had to play because he was one they had. And it was Dallas was a very, very good team, a very, very British, and they had decided, and I remember Bill Gibbons from WHAM, who was sports director at the time, saying, they're announcing all they're going to do, Charlie, is put the ball out of bounds and stop your creative attack, because we had a very creative attack, you know, with Gorey and our midfield,
Carlos. The league leading scorer, 19 goals, 8 assists that year.
Yeah, Eskos and Doy in the middle.
Seisler.
And, you know, and then you had Renato Da Costa. We were very creative with the ball. And we'd build the ball from the back. And all Dallas was doing was putting the ball out of bounds.
It was a very clash of styles.
Yeah, so they were using English. They were just knocking the ball out of bounds, knocking the ball long. And that was their style. And Bill said, Charlie, don't you think that's unfair? No, I said, it's their style. It's the English style at the time. They can't match us in creativity. So they were going to just stop the play as much to make us restart. And so that was how the game, it got to be 1-1, and it stayed 1-1 for a hell of a long time.
So 90 minutes ends, it's 1-1. Now this is the new rule this year that you put in place.
Yeah,
it's your
play with my idea.
And we're going to play 15-minute overtimes until somebody scores.
And the great story, you know, you read about in Clive's book, because I told Clive the story, Peter Shore told me before the season, he said, Charlie, it's the worst idea. We'll play all night. I said, Peter, never happened. Someone, you know, so remember, we're going into the fifth period, I think, and I made eye contact with Peter. He was looking at the press box. He just looked in my eyes. I looked at his. We didn't say anything. There was no nod, nothing.
I told you so.
But it was so, Peter just looked at me, and they were physical. It was a hot night. It was a long game, and finally, Carlos took the ball way over on the left side, the far left wing, and hit a ground shot couldn't have been more than a 6 inch off the ground and went into the far corner. Everybody cheered. Dallas cheered. The Dallas players cheered. We cheered. The game was over. Had to be close after 11. I thought it was about 11:30.
176 minutes. It was almost two full games
almost
played.
Almost two full games. Now, plus 4 minutes.
I had heard, I think we read this in Clive's book, that the league officials were ready to stop the match and do something to turn the winner.
Clive was there. Phil Woosdom was there. Phil wanted to stop the match. I said, no, we got to play it out. Lamar Hunt was saying, Charlie, maybe we ought to call the match. I said, no, let's wait. And if it's 12 o'clock, it gets to 12
o'clock. 12 o'clock?
We'll call it at 12 o'clock. The fans were tired. The fans are looking at us, and we're pacing in the press box. Sal DeRosa is saying, no, let's call the game. Sal was coaching, and Sal wasn't coaching.
Sal was coaching.
Sal was coaching, that's right, 71, 72, Gorey coach. And Sal wanted to call the game. I said, no, we're going to play at least till 12 o'clock. And I was the one that kind of insisted we play, and we played. So but what it did, it really took a lot out of us. And then we had to go down to Dallas. We lost in Dallas.
3-1. It was 3-1. 3 days later, so it was pretty quick turnaround. Before we get to that, the last match, the third deciding game, the fans... These were all traditional soccer fans.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what were they thinking about all this? Because the game had to just completely deteriorate after a certain amount of time.
I don't think anybody left, frankly. They stayed. I mean, they stayed. They were tired. I mean, there were groans and moans, but I had the sense that they felt this was something historic happening. And they stayed. And they did say it was... cruel and human. Some of the times, it was cruel and human to play that long, and we didn't ever think we were going to play another game like that. And the third game came about.
What I might have to do, and I'll try to do this on soccerskickinthegrass.com. I have a program from the Lancers from like 78 or something where they reprinted or 77. It was the Cosmos Lancers playoff program. Mm-hmm. And they have an article written by a member of the Dallas sports media about that series.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it really goes into detail about what the players felt after that game. And anybody who thinks that you can play like the NHL and just play till somebody scores, you can't do it.
No, you can't do it.
It's because the big difference is the NHL, you play maybe 2 minutes and then rest for 10 mm-hmm. with all the stoppages and everything. In soccer, there are no stoppages. So these players had to be just completely, completely spent. And like you said, it hurt us going down to Dallas where we lost 3-1. We come back, it's the third and deciding match, and it's 1-1, end of regulation, here we go again.
Yeah.
The same thing. Now, what happened in the third match?
Well, the third match, I can't remember the score, but I know how we lost the game. And
this
that was
2-1 was the final.
No, it was 1-1, and it was up 146 minutes, I think. And they penetrated down the left side, and Gorey was on the right fullback spot. And I can't fault Gorey. He tripped and fell. And when he tripped and fell, the left wing had a beautiful little chip shot to the near post. And I can still see Campos going up for it. But there must have been two or three Dallas forwards or right up there, and one of them got his head on it. It was a magnificent goal, magnificent goal. But if Gorey hadn't tripped, he tripped on the turf, he would have been able to stop that left wing from making that cross. And that cross, and they had it, and that's how they won the game. And it was at the 140 minute or so.
Yeah.
But it was, a tremendous game. I mean, 2-1, tremendous game, and Dallas went on to win the championship that year.
Actually, Atlanta won it that year, I believe. Atlanta beat Dallas.
Did Atlanta beat Dallas? I got it wrong.
Atlanta beat Dallas in the championship round, I'm sure. And it was a three-game series there as well.
Yeah.
So that team, again, maybe the best Lancer team of all, that 71 team.
One of the greatest, I think. Because that year we won the International Cup. You missed that. The International Cup is we brought in four teams from Europe. And whoever had the best record against the four teams from Europe won the International Cup.
Okay. Well,
and those games counted in the schedule.
Okay. See, now this is why we're talking to Charlie, because he knows all the answers. I think I got
the International Cup downstairs. I can show it to him.
Oh, well, how about that?
No, we played, I try to remember all the teams. We played Lenarossi Vincenza. We played
Hearts
of Scotland.
Apollon.
Apollon. We beat Hearts. We tie Hearts. We beat in Coventry City.
No, it was Bangu played too, though, didn't they? Was that just a friendly?
It was just a friendly.
Okay.
That was just a friendly. But we played a team from Israel, Hapoel Petah Tikva.
Mm-hmm.
Hapoel Petah Tikva. In that game, we tied, and we beat Lanarosa Vicenza. So we had like 2 wins and 2 ties. I think that was the best record of the visiting teams. They counted the schedule. But you see, Lamar Hunt could not play the Israeli team because of all his dealings with Saudi Arabia. So they brought a Mexican team in to play the Dallas Tornado.
So the International Cup was really, it was the condescending, there was nice bragging rights for the Rochester Lancers.
Right.
That was a second trophy that the team won.
Yeah.
1971 was certainly a great year for the Lancers that ended in heartbreak in the NASL playoffs in those 2 longest games in professional soccer history. In part 4 of our interview series with Charlie Schiano, we'll go back to the year 1972 and a singular achievement for all NASL franchises that the Rochester Lancers were honored to participate in. The only team in the NASL to ever appear in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. We will talk about that series in Guatemala and some of the great stories that came out of that tournament in our next installment, along with the NASL season of 1972. Thank you very much for listening to SoccerIsAKickInTheGrass.com podcast, and we invite you to come back in about a week's time for part 4 of our series with Charlie Schiano. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast version of Soccer is a Kick in the Grass. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass podcasts are brought to you by the following sponsors: Top Notch Monogramming, JC Fibers of Rochester, and Salvatore Pizza. Be sure to keep visiting soccerisakickinthegrass.com for future podcasts. And don't forget, soccer is a kick in the grass.